It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, overlooking downtown Kodiak, where it's 34 degrees right now. We're looking for showers, turning to rain this afternoon with a high near 42. East wind to 25 miles per hour, could gust as high as 40. Coming up at 12 straight up, an update from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization.
Thank you for listening in today, December 24th, 2020. My name is Mike Twenge, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Director, and I'm also the City Manager. The members of the Emergency Services Council are with me today. They met again this morning to discuss the COVID situation here in Kodiak. Some outcomes of the meeting are to continue with the mask mandate, the 25% occupancy rate, and continue to hold the community risk level until we reduce the number of active COVID cases. The recent public announcements from the EOC PIO office show the daily COVID case count continuing at a steady rate. There have been 91 cases in the past 7 days. We have 139 active cases, and right now most of these cases occurred as a result of close contact with a positive person. A few are travel related, and some are unknown transmission cases. With the daily reports coming into Public Health and the Emergency Operations Center, some positive case counts are delayed because of off-island testing laboratories. Others are backlog cases. The daily releases from the EOC is not a clear reflection of our local daily case count. We need to add up the rates from previous reports to get an accurate daily count, which is around 15 positives per day. This remains a high number, although we have collectively reduced cases from weeks ago. It is quite evident this community is working together to keep the case count low. One important number to note is the total number of active cases, but let's not lose sight of those that have recovered and those that did not. So if I could share a word of caution, please avoid gatherings with those outside of your immediate household during this period of rising cases in town and across the state. Take a moment to consider how you might modify your holiday plans to help keep your friends, family, and fellow community members safe. Be mindful of the people included in your social bubble. Consider outdoor gatherings if you need to get together. Hopefully, we will not see a spike in cases like we did after Thanksgiving. Remember, there can be a 7 to 14 day delay in symptoms. You can also use social media platforms like Zoom for a way to talk to friends and family. None of these are ideal. COVID is certainly not ideal. However, we all need to work together to reduce the spread of this nasty virus. One way to get our economy back and healthy is to reduce the spread. One way to open our schools is to reduce the spread. One way to help the hospital staff is to reduce the spread. One way to reduce the spread is to respect the fact that you should be in quarantine or isolation if you're considered a close contact or receive a positive test result. Stay home if you're sick, please, for the sake of our community. Fortunately, there are reduced local travelers right now, but that number increases after the holidays. The airport greeters continue to meet arrivals and recommend travelers stay quarantined for a couple days to understand if they are healthy. As we know, travel is a risk of contracting the virus. The harbor continues to issue the harbor use agreements. There are currently two vessels with crew under quarantine. You've heard about the vaccine. The state of Alaska is scheduling the COVID vaccine distribution. This will be conducted through a tiered method. The first vaccines go out to frontline medical workers, and Providence Hospital has begun that process. Our EMTs are receiving the vaccine now. Phase 1A Tier 3 recipients are scheduled to begin January 4th, and this includes licensed, certified, and other workers in the healthcare settings in Alaska that provide direct personal care or home and community-based services, laboratory technicians, phlebotomists, and workers performing COVID testing. To see the Alaska Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee notes and further information, research covidvax.alaska.gov. I'll spell that out. covidvax.alaska.gov. So I want to wish everyone a safe and joyful holiday season. May you find ways to relax and appreciate the fact this community is working to keep one another healthy. In the midst of a global pandemic, this is a monumental task, but Alaskans are capable. So stay safe, stay distance, and wear a mask. And we'll return again next Thursday, same time, for another community COVID update. Merry Christmas to all. Thank you.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
As we just heard, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported 6 new cases of the Kodiak Island Borough, including 5 close contact cases and 1 community transmission case. This brings the current case count in the Kodiak Island Borough to 857 cases, with 139 cases currently classified as active. To date, there have been 35 hospitalizations on Kodiak, with 2 patients currently hospitalized. There have been 5 deaths locally due to COVID-19. As we heard, risk level continues at red here in Kodiak with a 25% occupancy limit in public places. The state's salmon returns this summer were full of ups and downs. In many areas of the state, the runs and harvests were far lower than expected, while Bristol Bay sockeye and Kodiak pinks came back strong. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Izzy Ross has this report.
More than 58 million sockeye salmon returned to Bristol Bay this summer. It's another in a series of enormous runs to the fishery. The commercial harvest was just as impressive. Bristol Bay's fleet hauled in one of the largest harvests on record. But while the Bay's run exceeded 50 million fish yet again, many other areas of the state were far below their forecast. Here's Dan Leash, an economist with the McDowell Group.
When you take Bristol Bay out of the picture and look at sockeye harvests in Alaska, the non-Bristol Bay sockeye harvests this year were the lowest on record since 1976.
Across all species, the value of the state's commercial salmon season dropped more than 50% from last year. Harvests were also down by almost half.
Sometimes when you have a low harvest year, the prices will rise, but that didn't happen this year. So it was sort of a death by a thousand cuts in terms of the impact of the seafood on the harvesters this year.
Southeast Fisheries saw their worst salmon runs in more than 4 decades, and the commercial harvests there took a big dive this season. Andy Piston is a biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Ketchikan.
It's been the mid-70s since we've seen a total harvest in southeast Alaska this low.
Piston says harvests were down not only for sockeye, but across all species, from chum to coho to pinks.
It's the lowest pink salmon harvest since 1976. And pink salmon are often the most abundant species in the catch down here, so that brought our total harvest of all species way down for this year.
There are a lot of factors that can affect salmon mortality. For southeast pinks, Piston says trawl surveys used for forecasting suggest that lower survival in early marine waters might lead to lower returns. There just aren't a lot of juveniles leaving fresh water. On top of that, he says there might also be problems further out at sea.
For some species, we're also seeing indications that fish aren't growing well out in the ocean. And for example, with sockeye salmon, you know, we collect scale samples from some of our stocks here in southeast. And what we've seen in a lot of years since about 2015 is very little growth in their last year at sea.
Meanwhile, Kodiak's pinks did well, although the sockeye harvest was down from last year. Fishermen brought in more than 21 million pinks, more than 3 times that of 2018. Copper River had one of the weakest sockeye runs on record. Fish and Game closed the fishery after just a few openers. It met its escapement, but the commercial harvest was 92% lower than the average over the past decade. And the Chignik River had its worst run on record this year. It was 40% smaller than the disastrous run of 2018. Chicknick's runs over the past 3 years have been extremely low. This year, there were no commercial openers for sockeye, and the fishery didn't meet its minimum escapements for the early or late runs. Ross Rennick is an area management biologist at the Chicknick Weir.
It was a very bad year. Folks out there really struggled, obviously, not just with the commercial fishery, but with the subsistence as well. It was very difficult for folks to get fish in Chicknick this year.
The U.S. Secretary of Commerce this year allocated more than $10 million in relief funding to the Chicknick fishery. The state is now working on the final draft of a plan to allocate that funding to Chicknick fishermen, communities, and research. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, I'm Missy Ross.
Alaska's beleaguered ferry fleet has weathered 2020, despite some rough seas. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick has this year in review on the highs and the lows of the Alaska Marine Highway System.
Even before the pandemic, things were off to a rough start. Governor Dunleavy had vetoed extra money approved by lawmakers the year before, and that left the promise of long lulls between ships. Here's Cordova Mayor Clay Copeland urging lawmakers to fully fund the ferry system.
We appreciate the Alaska Marine Highway System trying to work with the resources they have to provide service, but frankly, it's not working.
Service gaps ended up being even longer than envisioned by transportation planners. The Matanuska, the fleet's sole mainliner, broke down on January 26, exposing the weakness of having no slack in the system.
We tried for a very long time to try and see what we could do to keep at least one vessel in some sort of ready reserve status.
Shannon Adams heads the Master's Mates and Pilots Union, which represents crew members that drive and maintain the boats.
And due to budgetary issues, we were told that anything that is currently tied up down in Ketchikan is tied up for a specific reason, and they don't have the budget to be able to keep anything in a ready reserve status.
That meant, aside from a daily shuttle between Ketchikan and Annette Island, the Alaska Marine Highway System remained paralyzed until March. The state did charter some private catamarans, but those were only available to move foot passengers. There were no vehicles or heavy freight. In June, lawmakers boosted the ferry system's appropriation to keep the vessels running year-round. Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez co-chaired the House Finance Committee.
I think we put the Marine Highway System in the place where they should be able to provide adequate service throughout the system in this upcoming year, as long as the governor doesn't veto those monies.
You're going to see the Alaska Marine Highway System was the amount of money that the legislature put in, which was considerable. We vetoed it back, but there's still more money in it this year than there was last year. Going into next year.
The governor also erased the extra funding for crew quarters for the Alaska-class ferries. That would allow crews to work rotating shifts and increase their operational range. It was around that time that the pandemic hit Alaska hard. Ridership declined, as did revenue from the fare box. The Dunleavy administration allocated $10 million in federal pandemic relief set aside for transportation, but the agency said that wouldn't make up the shortfall. In May, the Alaska ferries still didn't require passengers or crew to wear masks. But in June, an infected crew member on the Tustamina unwittingly exposed passengers that had disembarked in Unalaska. So later that month, AMHS began requiring masks and a COVID-19 test for passengers. It also reduced capacity on ferries, leading to people being turned away from boarding. The year 2020 was also when the state dropped its four-year plan to leverage federal highway dollars for transportation projects. The federal aid can be used for capital projects, roads, bridges, and vessels, but not operations. Ferry fans pointed out that aside from about $17 million that can only be spent on marine vessels, the state wasn't asking for any additional federal funding or fixing or upgrading its aging fleet. DOT's Program Development Director Ben White said there were other critical transportation projects.
We have more needs in the state for infrastructure than we have available federal funding, so we're having to stretch the federal dollar further and further. But there isn't a policy that's roads first.
Through all this, a task force largely appointed by the governor worked through a controversial $250,000 ferry report. The Northern Economic Study had torpedoed the idea of privatization, and the AMHS work group also reaffirmed the ferry system's value to the state. The nine-member group was headed by Tom Barrett, a retired Coast Guard admiral and former pipeline services executive. He said the outpouring of support for the ferry had been loud and clear.
It's not ever going to be able to be the fleet of blue canoes that existed, 25 years ago. and even the, you know, the services provided and kind of the romance, the Alaska romance that goes with that. But yeah, I don't think as our goal, I don't think I could listen to some of the people and say, yeah, well, let's just trash it. We've got some hard decisions, but that's not one of them.
The group made some recommendations on ways to streamline operations and shrink the mismatched fleet. It also recommended giving the Marine Highway more autonomy, away from operating as an arm of the state's transportation agency. It delivered its report this fall. The governor didn't mention the report again until December, when he announced a still slimmer ferry budget.
We really believe that there needs to be a discussion with the Marine Highway Reshaping Committee, which I hope also takes place, and we'll be talking to legislature about that, because that committee worked on looking at ways to, again, make the ferry system sustainable for coastal Alaska.
Coastal lawmakers fired back that the report had been delivered in October with a list of actionable items for the executive. To date, none have been addressed. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A new federal act to support fledgling fishermen is pending approval from President Donald Trump. The Young Fishermen's Development Act passed through both houses of Congress this month with strong support from all three Alaska legislators. If enacted, the act would provide training and mentorship opportunities for commercial fishermen who are just entering the industry. Sabine Pooks in Kenai has the story.
It would be the first program of its kind for fishermen. The U.S. government already sponsors comparable professional development programs for young ranchers and farmers. Grants and program funding would come from Congress, but it would be up to local communities to decide how to use funding.
Now, local nonprofits or Native organizations can apply and propose projects that make sense for that year.
That's Marissa Wilson. She's the executive director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, one of the nonprofits that brought the idea for the act to Representative Don Young's desk 5 years ago.
Things are changing so much year to year that having this kind of bottom-up program focus, I think, is going to be a lot more effective than having some kind of program legislated, you know, at the federal level and then trickling down across the nation.
Wilson is a fisherman herself, based out of Homer. She started fishing with her dad when she was 14, but she says those who aren't born into fishing families can have a hard time getting started in the field. As a result, Alaska's fishermen are trending older. In 2016, the average age for a commercial fisherman in Alaska was over 50, a decade older than it was the previous generation. That is known as the graying of the fleet. Researchers from the University of Alaska studying the fishing industries in Bristol Bay and Kodiak found that young people were deterred by high economic and social barriers to entry, not lack of interest. Fisheries demand a complex skill set, says Linda Benkin, executive director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. They have to be able to run a boat and a business and keep up with technology. And the industry has become more competitive over the years. This year, Cook Inlet fishermen, in particular, had to grapple with low returns on harvests and the prospect of closed fishing areas. Altogether, it can be daunting for those without experience or family ties. Over the last several years, young Alaska fishermen took trips to Washington, D.C. to talk to legislators about the act. They joined forces with peers across the country under the umbrella of the Fishing Communities Coalition, a national association of commercial fishing groups. Abby Turner Frankie of Soldotna fished with her family from the time she was 8 years old. She's now a project coordinator for the North Pacific Fisheries Association in Homer. She went to D.C. to lobby twice. She says it was exciting that young fishermen were involved in pushing the act through.
For them to participate in that process, to meet with delegations with staffers and to see this progress from being written and going through different iterations and also having to explain themselves and why it is beneficial, I think is an incredible learning opportunity in itself for young fishermen.
The act does not exactly specify what age is considered young, but does say that the term encompasses those who are either starting out or have worked on a commercial fishing vessel for no more than 10 cumulative years. Wilson says fishermen had originally proposed the act be funded by the Asset Forfeiture Fund, the fines collected from fishermen who violate regulations. The bills that passed in the House and Senate, however, show money coming from the regular congressional appropriations process each fiscal year.
It's great that we now have this mechanism that will be in place as soon as it's signed by the president, but it's going to be something that we'll need to continue advocating for funding for moving forward.
Funding will be allocated through Sea Grants, a partnership of the federal government and universities across the country. Eligible tribal groups, organizations, and institutions will be able to propose projects for funding. The Young Fishermen's Development Act is awaiting approval by the president. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. It's a feast of fishes. A look at holiday seafood traditions after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
For centuries, seafood has taken a special spot on holiday tables all over the world. Unlike the traditional green bean casserole, eating different fish dishes is served up with meaning. One of the oldest traditions stemming back to Roman times is the Feast of Seven Fishes, an Italian Christmas Eve celebration by Catholics to honor the birth of baby Jesus. The number seven is considered the perfect number and is repeated 700 times in the Bible, making the Feast of Seven Fishes a symbolic Christmas celebration. Dining can include 7 to up to 13 different seafood dishes as a way to refrain from eating meat or milk on holy days. One of the most famous dishes is bacalao, or salted codfish. Celebrants also feast on fried fish, such as smelt and calamari. In other countries around the world, eating lutefisk is a Christmas tradition in Norway and Sweden. It's made from dried white fish, usually cod, that's prepared with lye in a long series of water treatments until the fish becomes jelly-like. This dish goes back to the days of the Vikings. In Japan, consuming prawns on New Year's is to ensure long life, and eating herring roe is to boost fertility. Feasting on pickled herring at midnight in Germany, Poland, and parts of Scandinavia is done in hopes of bringing in a bountiful catch. And in China, a fish is served whole, symbolizing a good beginning and end in the coming year. One seafood that isn't so popular in the holiday celebrations in many parts of the world is lobster, because it swims backwards. No matter what your seafood favorites are, include them in your holiday meals. You could be starting your own family tradition, and you'll be giving back to the fishermen locally and around the world. Happy holidays from Alaska Fish Radio. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 24th day of December, the year 2020. Christmas Eve. The sun rose today at 9:54 a.m. and it will set again at 4:26 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 32 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 28 seconds. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 4:45 p.m. That will be a 1.92-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:47 this evening of 5.7 feet. Our next low tide on the east side will be at 4 in the morning, 3:58 a.m. That will be a 2.99-foot tide. Call that a 3-foot tide. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 10:29 a.m. of 8.2 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 5:09 this afternoon. That's going to be a 3.2-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 11:12 p.m. of 10.97 feet. Let's call it an 11-foot tide, so that is an 11-foot tide at 11:12 p.m. Your next low tide on the west side will be at 4:56 a.m. of 5.01 feet, and your high tide for late tomorrow morning on the west side will be 11:01 a.m. of 13.29 feet. 38 degrees right now here in Kodiak. It does feel warmer. Look for rain tonight, low around 36. Southeast winds of 30 miles per hour with gusts as high as 45 miles per hour tonight. For Christmas Day, rain is likely mainly before 9 a.m., then mostly cloudy skies, high near 41, southeast wind to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation on Christmas is 60%. And for Christmas night, mostly cloudy skies, gradually becoming mostly clear with a low around 30 overnight on Christmas. South wind to 5 miles per hour should become west after midnight. And for the day after Christmas, mostly sunny skies, high near 35, southwest wind to 10 miles per hour. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 980 millibar low in the North Pacific will move to 350 nautical miles south of Kodiak Thursday morning. This low will move north to 85 nautical miles southwest of Kodiak and go to 985 millibars Friday morning, then move into Bristol Bay by Friday afternoon. There's a new low tracking into the Gulf Friday afternoon. It is 230 nautical miles south of Cordova. The result of all that, gale warning through tonight on Marmot Island, the Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. East wind to 25 knots right now, will increase to 35 knots this afternoon. Seas building to 19 feet this afternoon. For tonight on the east side, southeast 35, seas to 20 feet offshore. And for tomorrow, Christmas Day on the east side, southeast wind to 30 knots, seas a sloppy 13 feet. Over on the west side, in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Friday. Southeast wind to 15 knots right now, will become northeast 30 knots this afternoon. Seas building to 9 feet this afternoon in the Shelikof. For tonight, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, Christmas Day in the Shelikof, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 6 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay gale warning tonight, southeast 20 right now, will become east 30 this afternoon, seas building to 11 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southeast winds to 35 knots and seas to 12 feet in Chiniak Bay. And for tomorrow, southeast 25, seas to 9 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory through Friday, southeast 15 right now will become east 30 this afternoon, seas building to 11 feet in Marmot Bay this afternoon. For tonight, look for east wind to 30 knots and seas to 12 feet. And for Friday in Marmot Bay, east wind to 30 knots, seas to 12 feet. Not so nice. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary's Angel of Love effort works differently this COVID year. As in previous years, all donations go to KHA's scholarship program, which supports Kodiak students in health-related fields. The program includes the Margaret Hall Scholarship, honoring KHA's dear friend and member who passed recently. Your suggested donation of $10 will be either in memory of a loved one or in honor of an esteemed person. Since the PKIMC Hospital Holiday Tree is not available, your names will be on the virtual tree on the Facebook page. That's the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary's Facebook page. To arrange a special person's recognition, please call Roberta at 486-6189. We just got a new PSA for the public library for the week of December 28th through January 2nd. The library trivia game is celebrating the end of 2020 and will be held next Wednesday, December 30th at 6 p.m. The Zoom link is on the library's web and Facebook pages, and those are great places to check out every day. All are welcome to join the merriment. The library will be closed Friday, January 1st. Happy New Year. And the library's kindness challenge continues. Spread good cheer and kindness this holiday season. Pick up or download a copy of the challenge, complete 10 or more activities, and a star with your name on it will be hung in the library. What greater honor? Return completed challenges by December 31st. The library also offers home delivery for those unable to get out of the house and curbside pickup at the side door. Call the library for this service, available Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the public library is open again. They're open by appointment Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m., 1 p.m., 3 p.m. for 90-minute visits each day. Everyone must wear a mask and follow social distancing guidelines. So even though the library will be closed tomorrow, they will be open Saturday, the day after Christmas. For more information about any of these programs, contact the Kodiak Public Library at 486-8686 or go to their website or Facebook page. The borough and city buildings are closed now. They were open until noon today, and they'll be closed tomorrow as well. But they'll be open again on Monday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 2017, the GCI Suicide Prevention Fund has given nearly $500,000 to Alaska organizations and nonprofits in an effort to help prevent suicide and promote healthy communities. More information about suicide prevention resources and initiatives can be found at gci.com/gives.